Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
What is up, LAFB fans? Will Decker, your host from the Bruin Bible, and draft is in session. We are here to talk about Bet Online and the good people behind the brand. Football season is officially back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all your football betting needs this season. You'll find the latest odds, matchup info, player needs, and game trends. And as your continued source for all sports wagering info, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports and events like MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code LAFB to receive your rewards. Bet Online, where the game starts. What is up, and welcome to the latest edition of the Bruin Bible. A somber one at best. It was just a very, very tough loss. Will Decker, your host, joined by our usual guest, the Madman, the man, the myth, the legend. Mondays with Madman, always a fun segment to bring this guy back. But, Madman, we're a little heartbroken today after last night's loss. 34-28 thriller to the University of Arizona Wildcats and our old friend Jed Fish getting the job done at the Rose Bowl. And just a culmination of a lot of different emotions on how close we were to, you know, controlling our destiny, which we still may. You know, I'm going to give you kind of the lane for that in just a little bit. But, you know, just rolling into this game 8-1, we have USC around the corner. If we just take care of business tonight, I think there's a real chance game day comes through, you know, different scenarios playing out where the national spectrum really shines its light on Los Angeles. But the guy we got to start with, you know, Jaden Delora for Arizona, you got to give credit where it's due. I came into the game knowing he was a very solid quarterback, but I came away even more impressed. And the word that came to mind was poise. And this guy got it done on so many different third downs, a constant nagging point for UCLA, you know, over this past season. And, you know, it started in the first quarter, you know, that 3rd and 18, if they're up 7-0, UCLA's got to get a stop, and he hits Wiley for a touchdown on 3rd and 18, 3rd and long. You got to get the offense off the field on that. If you're UCLA's defense, continue throughout the game, you know, end of the third quarter, you know, we're talking, it's 21 all, 4th and 3, Carl Jones makes the stop on 3rd down. Everyone's hyped up. 4th and 3 comes, and then Delora delivers to Jacob Cowing. This guy was roaming around and playing like kind of like a poor man's Johnny Football, if you will, just how he was able to roll out of these sacks and make plays. Give me your thoughts on Jaden Delora and just how the UCLA defense played last night in total.
Yeah, Will, I love some of the references there. And there's a couple of references for me that came to mind a bit. One was, that game last night felt a lot like the Fresno State game last year with Hayner. You know, when you talk about some key third downs, you know, 3rd and 18 from the 22, that's almost an impossible down. And we had similar breakdowns in the secondary last year against Fresno State in those exact same scenarios. Then, of course, that 4th and 4 where he kind of dances to the outside and finds Cowing. I don't even know how he saw Cowing, because Cowing came all the way across the end zone from that left side to just sort of snare it out of midair. But I think, Will, he was really special. And I think that this is now, we've got two elements of tape here on how our pass rush does with these mobile quarterbacks. I think that it was a very similar outcome as what we saw against Oregon, right? Again, Mo Osling was the leading tackler on the team. We didn't really have a strong linebacker performance. We had the 3 sacks. We had 1 quarterback hurry. But I think what we're starting to notice here is, for as great as Latu is, for as great as the Murphy twins are, and as great as our overall pass rush is, they're straight line pass rushers. And it becomes hard when the likes of a Bo Nix, the likes of a Jaden Delora, can kind of wiggle a little bit horizontal and stay in the pocket and extend those plays. And that's where we start struggling a little bit in terms of linebacker range and then having to put too much on the secondary. And it was just a difficult game. We never could grapple our control of this game. Even when we took the lead 28-24, you never felt like it was safe. You were hoping for that one stop. And you alluded to a couple of key moments, Will. For me, one of the key moments really was that 2-for-1 opportunity at the end of the half where, you know, down 21-14, we're driving. We still haven't figured them out defensively. DTR stretches, lunges, ball pops out right before his knee hits. That takes at least 3 off the board. And then we come back that first drive out of the second half. Charbonnet's doing his thing. We get Bobo involved. We get Cam Brown involved. And then Barmira misses the 46-yarder. And so to go 0-for-2 in that situation, I think, really put us behind the 8-ball. Because even if you play that out, even if forget the touchdowns, even if you get 3-3 and it becomes 21-20, when you take that lead, now you're up 2 possessions. So even if Delora burns you on that 4th-and-4, now you still have the ball with the lead and a chance to bleed it out and make it a 2-possession game with Charbonnet, who was running the ball at will. So I thought that was a really key moment. And then obviously everyone remembers the 4th-and-4.
Yeah. And I mean, you brought up the point, the DTR fumble before the half. And that was the first moment I think I was really nervous. You know, I was upset at the 3rd-and-18 where Delora got it. But once we got back and tied it up 14-14, I'm like, we got this. We're going to be fine. The illegal formation for Charbonnet of the play before they get the first down has to go back to 4th-and-7. Then DTR comes out and fumbles the football. That's a team that just doesn't want the moment. I mean, that was what came to mind for me. And it hurts me to say that as somebody for UCLA. You have to capitalize on those opportunities if you want to be a team playing in those New Year's Six bowls. And just the lack of just, you know, understanding of the moment and putting pen to paper on that is what cost them in that moment. So that was really, really tough to watch. You know, just a lot of different things. And there's a lot of different keys I want to talk about. Do you think some of the defensive struggles have been to the absence of Bill McGovern, who's missed his 3rd straight game for unknown reasons? I know it was an illness to start, but 3 games, I mean, this must be something serious. Our thoughts and prayers go out to McGovern. But just kind of wondering what's gone on with our defense, because 2 of our 3 most egregious defensive performances have happened in the last 2 weeks, you know, in the entire season. And, you know, absently was, you know, Bill McGovern. What do you think of that scenario?
No, I think that's it's completely right, Will, because I think the big mistake, the big change, I should say, from last year to this year has been the connection that Bill McGovern has had with his defense. There's been a feel for who they are individually as well as collectively. They've built a very strong bond. And I think McGovern was someone, although schematically came from a similar tree as Jerry Azanero, I think it was his emotional intelligence, his EQ of being able to relate to players, listen to players, and make in-game adjustments that's so critical. You can script a play out. You can script an offense. You can script a defense for that first drive of the game, the first drive of the second half, and sort of have situational football in different spots. But the coaching comes in game with the adjustments, with the nuances, understanding who's got it going, who doesn't, and not having your defensive coordinator is certainly very significant there, Will. And I think now there has to be a sense, because this defense played out very similar to the Oregon game where you had these 2 mobile quarterbacks. And now with Caleb Williams coming to town, now this is the 3rd mobile quarterback, arguably the most talented of the 3 that UCLA is going to face. I really think Chip needs to sit down with McGovern and I think change up schematically from the standpoint of a spy. I think you have to have a spy. I think it has to be Carl Jones Jr., where that individual is just specifically responsible for the quarterback. Because the things that I saw last night, and the things I've seen with Knicks and the things that I see with Caleb, is they have this incredible ability to elude the initial wave of the pass rush. They can make a move and then sort of dance around there to wait for their receivers to get open. And now you're in no man's land, because now your pass rush is scattered. They've lost gap containment. They're trying to chase a guy down. Your secondary has to hold on longer. And now your linebackers are in no man's land. They're like, well, do we run up and sort of help and close that gap? Or and at the risk of really exposing our secondary, or do we stay back there and just give these quarterbacks 7, 8, 9, 12 yards of rush ability and sliding and getting the tempo and the pace going? I think you have to now think about a spy for this SC game coming up. And I think those adjustments and that feel can only happen if McGovern is fully locked in and engaged. I think it has a lot to do with it.
You know, and Clancy Pendergrass and Ken Norton Jr. taking over the reins, but we need the man in charge to come back. McGovern was doing a good enough job to get these guys motivated and go out and play. And you made an excellent point on that. When, you know, the pass rush that we have, it's straight line pass rushing. And some of the defensive ends, if some of these guys want to play at the next level, they're going to have to learn how to play the run too, because you see the front seven just get dominated. I mean, Michael Wiley was kind of having his way. The running back made some plays in the receiving game, but also 21 carries, 97 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. He was moving the football at will in those areas. And, you know, I just think moving forward, we're going to need a lot more from this defense if we want to beat the likes of a USC, if we want to continue this train going. And that kind of leaps into my next question. I thought we blew the game and the season last night. You know, just the feeling we had, not necessarily the case. If we come out and take care of business against USC and something else has to happen, we will be able to potentially play for the Pac-12 championship and go on. Can you explain the scenario to UCLA fans who may be confused by this?
Yeah, absolutely, Will. And so obviously we're feeling a lot of hurt and pain, and there's a sense of everything has been lost. But the reality is, UCLA is just one situation away from being able to control its own destiny. And that is, namely, obviously, the Bruins need to beat SC, need to beat Cal, and win out these last two games. But as long as Oregon can beat Utah in Eugene, UCLA will play Oregon for the Pac-12 championship game. Because if Oregon beats Utah now and UCLA beats USC, now, Utah has two losses, USC has two conference losses, UCLA has two conference losses, and Washington has two conference losses. And when you look across all four of those teams, if UCLA beats USC, UCLA will be 3-0 against those other three teams this year. So UCLA will own the tiebreak against Utah, against Washington, and against USC. And so UCLA will be the number two seed in this championship game against number one Oregon. And considering that Oregon, up until last game, obviously they got stunned in Eugene against Washington. But prior to that, Will, Oregon had won 23 consecutive games in Eugene. So the probability that Oregon goes from 23 straight wins at home to then two straight losses at home is probably slim. So Bruin fans, let's wipe out some of the tears. Let's, you know, sort of indulge in some sadness for a little bit longer. We don't completely control our own destiny, but as long as that happens, and there's a pretty strong likelihood that Oregon will bounce back and beat Utah, because if anything has taught us this year and historically in the Pac-12, Will, it's very difficult to travel in the Pac-12. And it is hard to win on the road. Last night, we saw a couple of moments there. But in general, very hard to win on the road. Utah, as great a team as they are at home, an elite top 10 team at home, they are a very average 500 team on the road. So this is very likely to happen. And so as long as UCLA can reset themselves, and who knows, this loss might actually be the best thing that happened to UCLA season, because now they are going in a firm underdog against USC. The pressure in a lot of ways is off. Can you imagine the pressure going in into that top 10 game at home, really feeling it? Now there's this sense that the loss has already happened. We're firmly an underdog. No one expects UCLA to sort of bounce back from a loss against a 3-6 team at home to go play mighty USC. And so now they're back in this underdog, no one believes in us, chip on our shoulder type of mentality. And this thing could play out perfectly for UCLA moving forward. So I know it was a crushing loss last night, but still, the Rose Bowl is still very much in the cards.
Yeah, and I do want to say to a portion of the fan base that all is not lost. We are an optimistic podcast, the Bruin Bible. It's still in play, folks. We got to stay positive. We got to stay strong, and good things are coming our way. do want to address a couple things before we get to a couple game balls. I don't think we're going to do all three because I don't think there was enough fitting performances for that. What do you make about the fan base? One loss, you know, Chip Kelly, very bad loss at that. He's 8-2 on the season. Calling for him to be fired. I mean, I think this is ludicrous. I think this is a crazy sentiment when UCLA is on pace for potentially its best season it's ever had in program history.
Will, it's ridiculous. I mean, honestly, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I think sometimes with the fans, what tends to happen is that, look, UCLA has not won this conference in 24 years. They have not won the Rose Bowl in 37 years. So there's so much scar tissue and frustration that's built up in that fan base over the last 10, 20 years, especially when you look at a fan base, say, in their 50s and 60s, that were in their 20s and 30s during the Donahue years, during the years where every year USC and UCLA would play in the 70s, 80s, early 90s, and seemingly the Rose Bowl berth was on the line. And so for them, they're thinking about it in terms of that sense. Chip has the right formula. He is the best coach for this program. I know everybody, every time there's a loss, everybody harps back to recruiting. Well, we lost this game because of recruiting. We lost this game because of recruiting. At the end of the day, I want to reiterate this. 80% of this class has to have a 3.0 GPA. I'm sorry, fans. There are just not that many 3.0, 4 and 5 star football players out there. It's just not there. The average GPA of these star players is around 2.5. And so you can make an exception for 20% of your class, but 80% of your class needs to have a 3.0. And it really comes down to you have to think differently to be able to offset that. Look at the state of Cal. Look at the state of Duke football. Look at the state of Vanderbilt football. Look at the state of Stanford football when you don't get a class valedictorian like an Andrew Luck and a Christian McCaffrey walking through your door. It is so hard to be competitive at an elite institution that has these academic requirements. And Chip Kelly has been the Billy Bean of college football. Remember that great scene in Moneyball, Will, where Brad Pitt is sitting there, you know, there's the Yankees, there's the Red Sox, there's 50 feet of crap, and then there's us. That is the limitations that UCLA faces when they go and they recruit. And so Chip has the right formula. He's got it dialed up. At the end of the day, even if UCLA loses to USC and beats Cal and wins their bowl game, most probably the Holiday Bowl in that scenario, UCLA will finish 10-3, tied for the school record of single season wins in a season. And Chip will again have improved on winning percentage for the fifth consecutive year. So I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Chip needs to be at UCLA for the next 15 years to build this model out and get the next Charbonnets and get the next Bobos and get the next DTRs and start building this pipeline of success. This is the game we're playing. This is the game we have to play because we don't have the luxury that an Alabama or a Georgia or an Ohio State has. This is UCLA, an elite global institution, top 15. Now we're 16th in football, but top 16 in basketball, football, and global academics. And Chip gets that.
And I think this is a credible argument if you flip the script. If we're, you know, 3-6, 4-6, you know, this is a different type of argument. Like, yeah, you're right. It's not working with the recruiting. But the guy he's bringing in through the transfer portals are guys like Charbonnet, Latu, the Murphy twins, all impact players, Bobo. I'll keep going. I would argue five or six of the top 7 or 8 players are transfer players.
Absolutely.
At UCLA. So it's not like he's getting duds in the transfer portal. He's hitting home runs in the transfer portal. So love the Moneyball comparison as well. Billy Bean, that's one of my favorite movies, you know, with the Brad Pitt and the Jonah Hills of the world. Great stuff there. Two more questions before we get to game ball. If Kaz Allen plays, despite all the faults of our defense, is this a W for UCLA?
I think so, Will, because I think that it felt a little bit limiting offensively. Obviously, Charbonnet was the bread and butter. I'm sure you're going to allude to it. The 20-plus carries, the 184 yards, the 3 touchdowns. I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal. But if you look at that passing game, right, Charbonnet was third on the team with 38 yards receiving, but it came on 9 catches, Obviously, Habermel had that great touchdown in the second quarter to tie the game on a bit of a bust. And then you had Bobo 5 for 61 and Cam Brown 3 for 58. So you had a couple of receptions there, but nothing else beyond that. DTR only really had about 5 or 6 completions, true completions down the field. Kaz Allen being in that game, getting 6 to 8 touches from the backfield, A, alleviates Charbonnet, but B, it gives that thunder and lightning approach in the backfield that strains the defense. But then B, you give him another 6 or 8 touches out wide, and you can start going kind of 3-man stack on one side, and you can find openings in a way for Bobo and Cam Brown that you just can't without them. So we certainly felt the loss of Kaz Allen in a significant way. But if he balls out a second consecutive year next week at the Rose Bowl and Oregon hangs on, all will be forgiven and all will be forgotten.
Yeah, I think Chip is saving his, you know, Swiss Army knife for the USC game where he tormented that Trojans defense last year. 115 yards receiving, 3 catches, 2 touchdowns, and that electrifying 100-plus yard kickoff return. So Kaz Allen coming back next week, that's what's most important. Last question I got for you, and I don't know if the media has covered this as much, but it was something that I noticed as a fan. Are we starting to get a little worried about Jake Bobo going into this USC game? Because you look at the plays that he made, 5 catches, 61 yards. He wasn't, you know, someone that deterred the team in those catches, but he had 3 big drops. You know, first drive, you're down 7-0, 3rd and 9, drop that one. The second one, I'll give him a little bit more of a hall pass. It was more of just a flailing throw from DTR up in triple coverage, but he had his hands on the ball, didn't come down with it. And then the last play of the game, really, you know, extends for it. I know it's a tough catch, but my old rule is if it hits you in the hands, you got to bring it in. He didn't have a defender there. It was a tough grab. But is Bobo's drops something we should be worried about going to the biggest game of the season next week?
Well, I think it's – I don't know if it's necessarily his drops, but I think the drops are a proxy for where he is right now in terms of his game, his confidence, and his level of production. I think the first one, definitely, that first of the three you mentioned was a really, it really should have been a catchable ball. Second one was tough. He got his hands on it, but, you know, triple coverage, guys are smacking on his arms, smacking on his legs, you know, tough to kind of come down with that one. Third one, and I've watched this play 46 times already, you know, because I enjoy suffering, apparently, but, you know, in watching the last play, Will, even if he catches it, I don't think it's a catch because his knee was out of bounds. And I think that it would have gone back to the review. So I hope he's not killing himself over that. It was tough, but where his left knee was, Will, even if he comes down with that, the left knee was the first thing to touch and it was out of bounds. So, you know, that was maybe if DTR could have made that throw a little bit more to the left, a little bit more in the catch radius, we may be having a different conversation here. But I think overall, Will, you're spot on where he's obviously been fantastic in third downs, in fourth downs. He is terrific when he can find soft spots in the zone, over the middle, and on the outside. And I think the deeper issue here, Will, is, again, you mentioned it in your earlier question, I think missing Kaz Allen really hurts Bobo because I think the two of them together, when you can stack them on either one side of the field or on opposite sides, because their skill sets are so complementary, Kaz is kind of the 5-yard guy or the 55-yard guy, and Bobo is sort of everything in between. And that sort of concentration of traffic at all three levels of the defense creates that strain that allows a Logan Loya to come across the middle, that allows a TMA to get open, that allows a Cam Brown to be on the weak side and seemingly come up with really big catches. So I think Bobo is struggling a little bit without his running mate in Kaz Allen. And again, Will, we've sort of talked about this. Only 200-yard games on the season. I really only counted as one because a lot of the yards in that Oregon game were on garbage yards. So I'm hoping that we can get Bobo really the ball early in this USC game to get him feeling good again about himself. Because I think part of it with the receiver sometimes is when you don't know when your next ball is coming as frequently and as consistently, sometimes you put a little bit too much pressure on yourself when you do get a target and I'm seeing Bobo pressing a little bit. So I think if we can sort of get him the ball early in that SC game, make him feel good, I think that's really going to set up success moving forward there for that game.
And Jake Bobo still having an outstanding season for a UCLA receiver, 43 grabs, 651 yards, six touchdowns on an impressive 15 yards a clip. Let's move to the game balls. We're going to do two each. I think three would be a little excessive with a loss like this. I'm going to let you start as always, my man. Who are you going with for game ball number one, Madman?
Well, Thriller, you're always so gracious and gregarious and kind for allowing me to go first. So I'm going to take the lowest hanging fruit I can, and that is our man, the Terminator, Zach Charbonnet. Where would we, you know, so much of the conversation, Will, is, gosh, if we could have only completed that last ball, or gosh, if we could have just stopped Delora on that fourth and four when we were up 28-24 and a couple other plays. But my goodness, Will, where would we have been last night without Zach Charbonnet? I mean, the 180 plus, the three touchdowns, is just absolutely sensational. And you tweeted this out a couple days ago, and so I want to quote you because you're always so terrific in quoting others. But the fact is that Zach Charbonnet has missed officially two games, really two and a half, when you talk about not really getting a ton of run in the second half of that Colorado game, and really three when you talk about some of the second halves he sat out in the non-conference. And for him to still be clearing away the Pac-12 leader in rushing, it really just shows what he has meant to this team in the most critical of games. And when you go back and you look at the Utah game, the Washington game, the Oregon game, and now this game, he's been just absolutely phenomenal, the battering ram. And he's been the guy that's allowed us to do everything else off of him. And so it has to be Zach Charbonnet to start with. And even though he's missed this time, I still believe a huge game against SC, a huge game against Cal. Let's see where the dust settles. If he's around 1,400 yards and about 15 touchdowns, is that enough to get him an invite into Doak Walker consideration?
I think the case is there for him. If you're looking at just a per-game basis, you got to throw out the two games he's missed. He's up to 1,100 yards rushing on the season in eight games. I mean, that is an absurd number. And it was almost a quiet, you know, 184 yards rushing. It was, I compare this to, you know, prime LeBron. When we'd see him in Cleveland, you're kind of just watching the game, and then you look at the stats, and you say, oh, he got 28, 8, and 8 again? Like, this is incredible stuff. And that was just a typical Charbonnet performance. He had the two really solid, you know, 25-plus yard runs. The one run he had, second and 22, we got pushed back due to some penalties. And he ripped it off to the outside, 37. That was the only time I really felt like Charbonnet, like, you know, was taking advantage of this defense. But he was doing it all night, you know. I mean, it was just little incremental gains, the 7-8 yard stuff, and that adds up at the end. And, man, he was within striking distance of 200 yards again. So Charbonnet, just a special, special beast, man. Skip Hicks record, it's in play. We're just going to throw that out there. He's at 13 right now, can get to 22. We'll see if that happens. First game ball. Madman, I got to go with Grayson Murphy. I just have loved what this guy has brought to the table. Him and his brother Gabriel have been so good off the edge. And we have, you know, for all of our faults defensively last night, the pass rush I was actually very impressed with from the front four. A lot of plays Delora had to just kind of, you know, run for his life to get out of and make some crazy backyard football plays. But we generated, you know, close to 7 to 8 pressures last night, 3 sacks. And Grayson Murphy, from the day he's gotten here, has just been an impact player. And 5 sacks on the year, has done great things. He had another one last night, a tackle for a loss. And it's not even the sacks sometimes, because he's missed some of the opportunities. He could well be at 8 to 9 sacks this year. It's just the pressure he's been able to generate on the outside and just providing us a type of player that we haven't had in recent memory at UCLA. What do you think about Grayson Murphy being the first game ball for me?
Oh, I completely agree, Will. I think it's a great observation there, because it's hard to go defense first when the game ended the way it did. And I think you were very clear about the fact that one of the keys to victory was having this pass rush against Delora. And I thought for the most part, they did a great job. It's just that they were inherently limited with straight line pass rush ability. And I think that's where the nuance now has to sort of come into play and the adjustment has to come into play. But Murphy, the Murphy twins, Latu, Carl Jones, and, you know, that group in particular, that four in terms of the pass rush, they're going to need to build on this and have their best game of the year going into next week. So I'm really happy to see Murphy do a great job. He was terrific last night. It was just a matter of a couple of plays. We were just a couple of plays away.
And unfortunate, too, that the most elusive quarterback of the bunch will be coming out and playing them next week at the Rose Bowl in Caleb Williams. My first game ball, Madman. Going to you for game ball number two, your final one. Who are you going with and why? Because I've got a guy in the back of my mind that I want to choose, but I think you may get to him before I do.
Well, I'm going to go a little bit in a different direction here. And I think I'm going to go offensive line again, because I think they actually did a terrific job. Charbonnet was able to do what he needed to do. DTR was very elusive out of the backfield. And I think part of the issues last night was really down the field, we missed some throws. Most notably, the last play, but there were a couple of others. We alluded to some of the plays with Bobo. There were a couple of other plays out there on the field. And I think overall, though, if you had told me the offensive line was going to give us that performance at the start of the game, I would have felt very good about our chances of coming out on top. And so, again, I think that's a really great sign for next week in this track meet, where stops are going to be at a premium. And the way you're going to be able to generate stops is really through a sack, through pressure and forcing a holding call and getting behind the chains and trying to manufacture a play or two. So the fact that this offensive line has been holding up quite well is really significant. Again, offensively, we ran for 220. We threw for 265. It was very balanced. We sort of did what we wanted to do. It was more about execution in terms of passing lanes and finding the right guys and the right reads in the right spots early in that game and falling behind, more so than necessarily our inability to block Arizona in any way, shape, or form. Every time we got the ball, it felt like we could score. And that's really all you want to hope for an offensive line.
Yeah, and it was a powerful performance, as you mentioned. Just the rushing lanes they were able to open. Averaged 5.9 yards a carry on the ground there for UCLA. So very, very impressive stuff there. I agree. The offensive line has just been one of the brighter spots of the UCLA season as we move forward, because to begin the year, as we've talked about in length, it just was up in the air in so many different directions. Final game ball. I'm going with two different guys that I think will be coming back next year. And it's Hudson Habermill, who had the big touchdown. I thought he looked electric out there, as well as Colson Yankoff, who could be a six-year senior. I go with Habermill first because this is a program that has been able to generate top talent at the tight end position. This is clearly their next project. You know, we had Sam Connan come on in the preseason, a guy that had been to all the practices. And I go, who's going to break out for UCLA this year? If you had to pick one guy, who would it be? And he said Hudson Habermill. He thinks this guy could be, you know, the next great tight end at UCLA. And you look at just the raw physical talent. This guy is built like a Rob Gronkowski. He is 6'6", 252 pounds. And you saw it all on display. He shows little flashes here and there. And last night, I mean, we had two defenders go into Habermill and just pancake off of him due to the raw strength that Habermill possesses. He's able to take an extra 30 yards to the house. So a very, very impressive game from Habermill. Three catches, 64 yards, and a touchdown. And Colson Yankoff, I think the thing with Yankoff is I have found comfortability knowing that next year, if no transfers come in, we're going to have a Keegan Jones and Colson Yankoff backfield. And I don't think that's the worst thing possible. I was very skeptical about both these guys, you know, coming in this year. Yankoff had those two runs right to the goal line that led up to a Charbonnet punch it in. But he nearly got the touchdown that play, just tripped up under his own legs. Two carries, 15 yards, and he had two catches for 9 yards. So he's showing the all-purpose stuff that Yankoff possesses. I just like this guy as a change of pace back there. And, you know, he's not Charbonnet. I don't think anyone would say that. But in terms of that big bully, you know, that you need to muscle the football with, this is the Charbonnet type of guy.
you know, the bully ball rusher. And we got that in Yankoff coming back next year. What do you think about the Habermill and Yankoff selections?
Those are my other two guys, Will. So you read my mind there. It was just a matter of order. So I felt like, hey, I took the easy one with Charbonnet. I wanted to give you those two guys, obviously. I completely agree, Will. I think that Habermill and Ezekiel, I think the two of them together, both have sort of demonstrated different skill sets. Ezekiel is a slightly more athletic guy. I think you can do some more things with him further out on the edge, down the sideline, and do some interesting things. And then Habermill, I think I love that comparison to Gronk, because you can just plant him, 12 yards in the middle of any sort of a zone coverage, and he's going to catch that ball and he's going to bounce off guys and always fall forward. And you saw that last night. It was a great play by Habermill. He's got the swag too that we like. We saw a little bit of that swag against UW with those sunglasses. And I think Habermill and Ezekiel, Will, are going to be keys next week in terms of the X factors. And I completely agree with you with Yankoff. And I think that change of pace also in key situations, red zone situations, third and short situations, I actually think there's going to be something interesting next week playing off of Yankoff. I think keep an eye for a third and short, a fourth and short, where Chip has both Yankoff and Charbonnet in the game and maybe goes play action. And I think that the fact of the matter is, having Yankoff there to be able to do that, sure-handed out of the backfield, he runs very effectively in those sort of lanes, kind of going to the outside as well. Obviously, he can hammer it up the middle. Really pleased with his skill set. I know we've sort of made various comparisons with Yankoff. I keep thinking Toby Gerhart with him. Whenever I see him, I think of Toby Gerhart. And he hasn't disappointed in any way, shape, or form. Only the four touches, only the 24 yards. Modest statistics. But I think you and I have a refined enough eye to understand what he can bring to the table in a bigger game when the stakes are higher, and his versatility is absolutely key. So completely agree there. I think those guys were the two bright spots. And ironically enough, with Yankoff, no Kaz Allen, no Keegan Jones last night, and you didn't feel them as much in the second half. Obviously, we talked about missing Kaz Allen in that passing game, but we didn't feel like we missed him as much, because Yankoff, even in the few touches he got, was so effective.
So effective. And just, not highlight real plays necessarily, but plays that move the chain and kept the ball moving. And that's all you need to do when your number is called for a guy that's, not in the starting lineup, kind of behind a Keegan Jones as well. So Colson Yankoff, a name to watch for the future. That's it for the Bruin Bible, folks. I know it's a tough loss, but this week everything is on the line. We have to get over it. What's the secondary rule? It's, for players in the secondary, you got to have the shortest memory in the history of sports. We got to do that for our UCLA fan base. We got to put all of our focus on this USC game. Big things coming up. We're going to have the Victory Bell show this week. Make sure you're liked and subscribed to our UCLA LAFB channel and LAFB as a whole. Madman, any parting thoughts for the UCLA faithful as we head into the biggest game of the year?
Look, Will, I think that we have been here before sometimes, and where we've dropped a game that we weren't supposed to drop. And I know it feels like the bottom has fallen out, but next week, everything changes and everything is on the line. Win that game and the Rose Bowl is in play. A New Year's Six game is at play. This could be potentially the greatest season that UCLA has had in the 21st century. It still is all there for the taking, fans. And this team seems to really embody an underdog mentality. They were a decisive underdog against Washington. They were a decisive underdog against Utah. And they played their best games against Oregon when they had the hype, against Arizona. In these other games where they've gotten more hype and more attention, for whatever reason, it hasn't transpired. They're going to be an underdog next week. I think that's where they want it. DTR is an underdog kind of guy, and he plays to that. Chip loves to fly under the radar. Charbonnet is a subdued kid to begin with. Bobo is a quiet, unassuming kid from Duke with a lot of fire. Same thing with Kaz Allen. They're not a bunch of talkers. They are lunch pail guys that want to go in there and shock some people. And I think it's set up that way where now they can naturally, this team can naturally have their identity of the underdog. And I think it's going to be really special next Saturday, prime time, 5 p.m. Pack the Rose Bowl. It is going to be a wave of blue and red. And it's time to drown out the Cardinal in gold and win this game against Lincoln Riley, Caleb Williams and company, and take L.A. by storm. Look, we already have the higher ranked school. We already have the better basketball team. We already have the prettier campus. We already have more national championships than all the sports. Let's take football and just create the monopoly in everything in L.A.
The new monopoly is in Westwood, as Jerry Neuheisel, as I'm paraphrasing from that. Pack the Rose Bowl. We're going to have a tailgate out there for LAFB. Come by, drink some beers with us, talk shop before the game. But Bruin Bible, we are officially